Now he talks about what are the steps to this higher, you know, from sankalpa to go to yoga to go to sannyas. So it's a very beautiful example Bhagavan Sri Krishna has given us in verse number 3. Aru rukshor muner yogam. Karma karana muchyate. Yoga rudhasya tasyaiva. Shama karana muchyate. Together. Aru rukshor muner yogam. Karma karanam uchyate yoga rudhasya tasyaiva shama karanam uchyate. So Bhagavan gives the example of horse riding, because Arjuna was a warrior and that time horse was the main mode of transportation. Aru ruksho, so one who is desirous of climbing upon the horse, who muni means a contemplative sage, one who has contemplated upon life, and he wishes to reach yoga. Here he talks about karma yoga. So what is the method of reaching this yoga or this oneness with Lord? Karma karanam uchyate. Karan generally means cause. Here it is, karan is used as means. So karma is the means to climb upon the horse. To climb upon the horse, karma is the means that is used. And once you have climbed upon the horse, yoga rudha, so one who has climbed upon the horse, tasya eva, for such a person, shama karanam uchyate. So shama means the quietening of the mind is the means for the person who has already climbed upon the horse. And then we can see how this horse applies to us. So say you are riding on, of course we don't nowadays ride horse, but suppose you are riding and the horse is there and he starts walking and you are holding on to the saddle. And the horse is walking and you say, how am I going to get? You say, get up. So what do? You put one foot on one stirrup and just push yourself up, pull your hand, push your leg up, and then with great effort, you put your leg on the other side. Because unless you have caught on the horse, you cannot control the horse. You cannot, standing on the ground, pull the horse and control. But once you are on top of the horse, then you can... Now with your legs, with your hands, by holding the reins, you can control the horse. But the effort is required in getting my leg up. First one leg up, then hold on to that, and the horse is already moving. Horse is not under your control. Then you quickly put your other leg up and you control it. So the activity is required to get to a state where you can then control the situation. So just as a horse, you need a lot of activity in the beginning. And then as you get up there, then you can control the horse. So similarly, the mind is described as a horse. Just as a horse is very untamed, is a very violent horse, it's very active and has not been tamed. And in the olden days when they used to tame horses, that's what they would do. They would catch that and just jump on him and then, you know, with all their effort, control the horse. So similarly, the mind, when it needs to be controlled, initially you have to do a lot of karma. And what is karma? Karma yoga. When I do selfish activities, all it will do is stimulate the mind more and more and more to want more, acquire more. But when I do unselfish activities dedicated to the Lord, sharing what I have without doership, then slowly my vasanas reduce. As my vasanas reduce, my mind becomes less active. So that is called shama. So when my mind has become quiet after having done karma yoga, then I am able to meditate. So it does not mean that I have to keep doing karma yoga till age 70 or 80 before I start. No, you start meditation, but as you do more and more karma yoga, your mind will become less and less agitated, and it will be easier to quieten the mind and meditate or even focus. Like, you know, we are sitting in the class and mind is running somewhere else, or when I'm reading a book or when I'm doing puja, I'm offering to the Lord, but my mind is on work or on something else. So quietening the mind. In the modern example they give is mountain climbing. I was reading another commentary, like now, you know, Tenzing or Hillary, when they first climbed Mount Everest, you think one day they just decided, okay, tomorrow we are going to climb Mount Everest? No. They had climbed several smaller mountains before, climbed. And then, here is the one, you know, Muni, this is the verse number 3. So he says, first he practiced on smaller mountains, and then he went to Mount Kilimanjaro or Mount Whitney, and then slowly you go up to Mount Everest. Now, there's a lot of effort required in climbing Mount Everest, but once you reach the top, wow, it's so peaceful there. You know, people have described the scene as so beautiful because you can see the whole, you know, earth stretched out in front of you, the valley and the beauty, and your mind becomes so quiet. So initially you need effort to climb the mountain, but once you have reached the top, then your mind becomes very peaceful. So they say the family is like mountain climbing. All of us are householders, live in family. So just as when I'm climbing a mountain, and a mountain you never climb alone, especially if you go to like Everest or some difficult, you have already 3-4 people together and they are all tied with ropes. And then if one slips and falls, because you can easily slip, the idea is the other 3 can push him up. They don't say, good riddance, let him go, jaane do usko. No, you know, you pull him up. So similarly, in a family, when you are working, when somebody asks you, what are you doing? You say, I'm learning to climb a mountain. Because in family, we have to work together, you know, 3, 4, 5 people, mother, father, children, whoever is in my family, we all help each other to climb up, to come up. Not only physically helping each other, financially helping each other, emotionally helping, but also spiritually. That's what they say. The family's job is to uplift each other spiritually. We all have to grow together. That's why our children have to be taught these values in childhood, the importance of studying this literature and scripture. And then in the family or in your work, once you have reached that quietude with karma yoga, then what happens? Then there's no longer, the doer is no longer there. Then shama, then his mind becomes very quiet. There is no greed, no jealousy, no envy, no hatred. And he becomes a source of love, source of, you know, sharing with others. So that is what they are saying. Initially, you do activity with karma yoga. And then when your mind becomes quiet, then you become a source of joy for others. That's what I think Hansa talked about last time. Most of us work for happiness, while a wise person works out of happiness. He or she becomes a source of happiness. So shama is where the mind is quiet and the activities get reduced to a minimum. Why? Because he doesn't have any desire, so he doesn't need to go out and work too hard. I am comfortable, I am content with what I have. So slowly we have to develop this contentment, and that can happen only through contemplation, through right understanding. And through right understanding, we developed vairagya, we developed detachment, where I no longer depend on objects or things to give me happiness, and that can happen through karma yoga, through doing unselfish activities. Now there are 2-3 kinds of people. You know, there's one kind who, like a child, you know, mother says, you know, don't put your hand in the fire. Now if the child is smart, he understands, you know. Second kind is, why should I not put my hand in the fire? He will go put his hand and get burned. Oh, he's crying. So one learns, okay, by parents telling. Second one has to himself experience. Third one, even after experience, after a while, again, he will. So in life also, you tell your kids, you know, don't do this, don't do that when you go to college. Some of them will listen. Some of them won't listen and go through suffering themselves. And third one is, even after suffering, they will keep on repeating. And same thing happens to us. You know, some of us, say Bhagwan has said in the Bhagavad Gita or Swamiji has said, we'll do it. Some of us say, no, why should I? I myself have to go through the experience. But there are some of us who go through repeatedly, you know, life keeps us giving us blows, dande mar mar ke, but we don't learn. So there are three kinds of people. So let us see where we are, whether we are in the first, second or third category. Try to come to the third category. Like we were told in, maybe, I don't know if all of us, but I remember when I was growing, when my mother used to say, you know, Bani Pada Karo, you should read the scriptures, we should read the Bhagavad Gita, took me to Swami Chinmayanandaji's lectures, and I didn't think it was very important. You know, in those days, you listen, but it's okay. You know, I heard Swami Chinmayananda, I heard Rajneesh, I heard so many Mahatmas, didn't have much effect. Maybe it did. And then we went through, this came to America and did all this, and now after age, now again we are saying, are yaar, Bhagavad Gita we should study. So what happened is you went through the whole thing and finally you came to that original goal which Swami Chinmayananda had told me in 1960. You know, stay, sit and study the Bhagavad Gita, but we need to go through that. So there's this fisherman story. How many remember that story of the fisherman and the consultant? Fisherman was sitting, and anybody remembers that story? So then it's a good one to tell. So there was this fisherman who was had fished for 2-3 hours. It was around noon time, and he had finished his fishing, and he was sitting, you know, he had a small little boat with his feet up. So the government had hired this consultant to improve, you know, fishermen's productivity. So he comes, he says, look at this guy, he's sitting, what are you doing here? He said, I'm done fishing. He said, you're done fishing? Yeah, I have this little basket. It's enough to take care of my children. I'm just going to take a nap under the tree and then go sell my fish. He said, no. What are you doing? You're wasting your time. He said, well, what should I do? He says, you know, you have this small boat. You should buy a bigger boat. So when you sell this fish, take a loan from the bank, buy a bigger boat. Okay, then what? He said, then with that big boat, you can go out and fish and get a lot more fish. Okay, then what? He said, then you can get so many fish, you can pay off your loan, you can buy a second boat, and then you can buy a third boat, and soon you'll have a fleet of boats, and everybody will be fishing for you. He said, then what? He said, then you can sit and relax and do nothing. He said, that's what I'm doing right now. Why should I go through 10 years? So the point is not that one should not succeed, but the idea that this, you know, ultimately the goal of life is contentment and happiness. And if he's happy with one basket, leave him. He's fine. He's not having any problem. He's the consultant. So the problem is that we look for security in things. You know, if I get this, I will be secure, like our house. If I have a house, I'll be secure. Is the house secure? No. You have to secure the house first. Buy an alarm system, expensive, you know, go to Sonitrol. And then the alarm system sometimes doesn't work and the battery is down and the contact is bad and false alarms and all those headaches. So house is, now you have to secure the house. Say, no, I'm going to buy a gun. You know, gun will get me sick. Gun is the most insecure thing. Because then you are worried if the kids get it or somebody in the wrong hand. So you lock the gun in some safe and put the... Then what use is that gun? If the guy comes and you are looking for the key, you don't even know where the key is. So gun is most insecure. Or we look for secure in stock market. You know, they call it securities, right? Stock market, they call them stocks, they call them most insecure, especially the way what is happening right now. One day it's down 800, the second day comes up 100, then down 600, and every day you're looking, my port. So the point is that look for security in what is permanent, what is real, but we look for security in these temporary things. So they say it is a process where you stepwise, just as we climb the horse and then you control, climb the mountain. So similarly, you do your process of karma yoga and then go to this what you call it, quietude and meditation. And we have to prioritize what is my priority in life, what is important for me. And that one has to make very clear, that what is my main goal in life, what is my priority. And as we do more and more of karma yoga, our sattva will increase. Sattva means the purity of mind. What happens is that when I sit for meditation, or either I fall asleep, which is tamas, or my mind is agitated, which is rajas. But as I am doing more and more karma yoga, more and more bhakti, more and more dedicating to the Lord, my mind becomes quiet, becomes more sattvic. And they say even retirement should not be an end of activity. Retirement also, I should have a goal. Not that I have retired, now my goals are finished. No, no, what is my goal after retirement? And that's very, very important. That after retirement, my goal should be twofold. One is to give back to the world, serve, and second is attain enlightenment. Of course, that should not be delayed till then. Retirement, as I'm working also, I should do both, serve the world and work towards that. And like I one of my friend retired a year or two ago, and I was talking to his wife. I met them at a bank. He said whole day he just sits and watches TV. He just flips the channel. You know, what kind of retirement? You know, financially he's very comfortable. He has some hotels and motels he bought. He's a doctor. He was a doctor. So he has no goal and no purpose. So what kind of life is that? You know, is that what you're going to do for next 20 years? If you live 20 years, just flip channels? No. So goal should always be very clear. What is my priority? Then the question they ask, how long should I do this karma yoga before I can get quietude? How long? Should I say, okay, 3 years I do karma yoga, fourth year sannyas, fifth year enlightenment. It's like saying, how many years will it take me to learn music? You know, now people are, it takes them whole lifetime. You know, the years of practice. And again, depends on where you started. If you have a good voice, if you have a ear for music, you'll pick up faster. Another person may take longer. And even then, it is a lifelong process. Music. So similarly, spirituality is a lifelong process, but it depends where we are. You know, some people already at birth, they are highly evolved, and for them, you know, it's faster. And another one takes longer, but wherever I am, that should be mine. So how long should I do it? Bhagwan answers in the next verse. How long should I do spirituality before I can achieve that highest goal?